You're listening to STB Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Lyles, and welcome to this episode of STP Radio. I'm your host today for one of many interviews we are doing with the speakers from our upcoming STP conference. If you don't know, STPCon will be in San Francisco, California from April the 4th through the 7th this year. And be sure to check out stpcon.com where you can learn more about the conference, the speakers, our special events, and our conference pricing. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Look for @SoftwareTestPro on both of these. So let's meet our guests today. Today we have Ashley Hunsberger and Greg Seipolt with us. Welcome to the STP Radio Show, guys.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Doing well. So I'd like to start with a real quick introduction from each of you. So as you're called upon, just tell us a little bit about you, how you got into testing, and anything else you'd like to share with us about you. And let's start with Ashley.
All right. Well, I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. I work full-time remotely from home for Blackboard, based out of Washington, D.C. I guess I got into testing a long time ago. I started as a business analyst as a contractor to the Federal Communications Commission. And part of that work, other than designing systems, because we were very waterfall driven, we also had to design our testing, and I found I had a knack for it. And when we tried to get CMMI certification, we had to start documenting those. And it just always stuck, just writing out tests, finding what we needed to break and finding bugs, and been doing that ever since.
How about you, Greg?
I originally started my career as a software developer for about 4 years writing patches. I got sick of getting called out all the time and I had an opportunity to move over to performance testing. Started to find the love and, you know, kind of still being able to code and do performance testing. And roughly about 10 years ago, moved to DC from Dallas and started working with Ashley at Blackboard, kind of starting QA and kind of got away from my roots of being a coder and everything. And then roughly the four last years at Blackboard, they started introducing test automation, and that's where I kind of grabbed hold of that and started getting back to my roots and getting really involved with test automation. In the last year and a half, I've been at Gannett and kind of overseeing all their testing efforts there, around from unit testing all the way up to UI testing, and I continue to love the, you know, test automation field and continue to help people like our developers become more familiar with testing and making sure they're thinking about quality up front.
Well, you know, I think the elements of a really good team is having someone who understands the leadership and the functional testing side, and then also having someone who understands that technical side. And you guys are doing a lot of stuff that we're going to talk about in a few minutes about workshops and sessions together. But before I get to that, I want to talk about your organization or your website, Quality Element. And when I looked at your website, it's awesome. It's got a lot of blogs, a lot of articles. It really is very educational, and I learned a lot from it. But the four things that stood out to me when I looked at it was you make a lot of comments there, bridging the gap between engineering and QA. Love that. Building a culture of quality, coaching teams in behavior-driven development. And then the one that stood out is QA is more than just writing tests. So I'd love for you guys to tell us a little bit about how you guys started this, kind of what your thought process was, how you moved into this website, and where you see it going down the road.
That's an interesting question. I can start, and then Ashley, you can follow up.
Sure.
I think it really started last November at STP when Ashley and I presented, and we was talking to Dave Hefner and kind of our passion of round test automation, telling our story. And while we was, you know, in Colorado, we started just kind of brainstorming how we could kind of come together and kind of start passing our, you know, knowledge to other people. And that's kind of where it was born. And then started getting the opportunity to start writing blogs and really telling the story, you know, to other people of like around test automation strategies and stuff. And that's really where everything really started from where the site is today. And we just kind of continue to plug information into it as we get time.
like you said, we are a team. I mean, Greg brings the incredible technical aspect of it. I bring more my role as the strategist at Blackboard. And I like to comment a lot there, as you've seen from some of my blog posts probably. And we learn from each other. So I learn a lot from Greg, obviously, about the BDD. We're going through with that workshop soon. But, you know, I really like to focus when I'm writing and learning more about the industry as well. What are other people doing? And being able to reach out and sharing some of my knowledge on those strategies and letting people see it's not just about what tests can I do, but how do I really make a quality product? And, you know, from the automation to just general questions to ask and bringing it to everybody's mind on your team, not just the engineer, not just the tester, but your product owner, your scrum master, everybody working together. So that's where we like to go. And then, you know, this workshop is hopefully a little glimpse of what we hope to offer in the future and provide training kits and toolkits to help teams get to that next step in their testing journey, wherever they may be. So that's where we're hoping to go with that in the long run.
That's awesome. And you're talking about your session, Quality First?
Well, we're talking about the workshop as part of the training session with behavior-driven development and Cucumber. But with Quality First, yes, we will be talking, or I will be talking about, you know, how do you get your teams to really think about quality holistically and some of the challenges. There's a lot of cultural challenges in that, too. So that's what we'll be focusing on there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I could add to that a little bit, too. Some of the terms, building, you know, a culture of quality. You know, when I moved to Gannett about a year and a half ago, we really had to change the culture from a manual shop to test automation because they wanted to move really fast. And I'm still amazed from an enterprise company, which a lot of people may not know what Gannett is, but it's really USA Today Network. And we have over 96 newspaper, website, digital products across the country. And so we're delivering a lot of like content to people. And the one thing I've realized from our side of it is blurring those lines between QA and engineering. And the one thing I've really experienced in the last year and a half is how we've been very successful blurring those lines to where they're collaborating up front and trying to think about testing at the beginning of everything. And it's really made us very successful when it comes to like any type of like quality checks.
That's so true. I mean, I've been in organizations throughout my career where you have to start justifying your existence and why is testing valuable. You're seen as overhead. It's usually the first thing to get cut. It's usually the first thing to get looked upon as why are we spending so much in that area and how do we make that better? What do you guys suggest to an organization that's struggling to see the value of testing? What kind of things do you want to do beyond, you know, what you've said earlier? What do you do with that organization? How do you closely bridge that gap and take away those bridges between the teams?
You know, the biggest thing is the buy-in. I think the one of the biggest struggles in general is to have engineer like developers that in the past has just been writing code, maybe doing a little bit of unit testing, but kind of give them the bigger picture of how important testing is. And I think the part that really started bridging that gap together is when we started like really onboarding continuous integration into our build pipeline, because they wanted to physically get feedback really quickly. And that build pipeline started even from down to the DevOps level to where they're spinning up a server. And, you know, also this when the code's checked in and it's, you know, all those verification points. And if there was a failure, they was getting that feedback really quickly. And today, even with like USA Today, with all of our UI tests we have today, we can physically run against Sauce Labs and have feedback with less than 10 minutes just with our UI test. But the whole entire build pipeline, we could physically push a piece of code to production in about 35 minutes.
Yeah, and I think from our standpoint, my company's quite a bit different than Greg's and in our journey to continuous integration. The biggest challenge we've had is really getting the whole team on board and thinking we really need to do quality first. And we're making a lot of strides there. We've seen a lot of developers really looking to test their code before they commit anything. I do a lot of paired testing with my engineers and walking through and showing them other things that I would check that they might not have thought of before. I also go through a lot of exercises with the engineers, and I try to define the tests up front so that they know exactly what from the acceptance criteria that drives my test plans. And we identify what can we automate here, which I try to make pretty much everything, and as low a level as possible, and putting more and more on the unit level tests and less on the user interface tests. And so trying to get developers to think like that from a test perspective before they go into development is really eye-opening, and they start to see what a tester thinks about and the way that our minds work. And then they start to bring that aspect into their development, which I've seen a huge improvement in some of the developers I've been working with in their code product when it does get to testing. And we're really trying to do away with this, just develop and then QA has it for a few weeks and they're done. And we're like, no, that's way too late to find a bug. We need to find a bug as soon as possible. And that's really what I'm trying to drive home with the engineering teams now. And they seem to be, getting that and grabbing onto that concept. So I'm hoping to see it get even better in the future.
Well, I mean, I've talked to several folks who I think the Agile has kind of forced us to have that side-by-side parallel relationship more than Waterfall kind of led us in that mode of, I'm going to write code and then I'm going to turn it over and the testers are then going to test it. But now you see more of an integration between those teams because you're doing multiple sprints and iterations. So you've got, the development teams need to be more testing focused and vice versa. And you see tools that are coming out now and testing tools that are lending more toward, the development engineers and the folks that are working there. So people are interested in working as a team, I believe.
I totally agree. Just to kind of continue to add on to this a little bit. One of the things, is not to pick one technology for all of our testing. We've really aligned testing frameworks with the tech stack. Like if the API is being developed in, Node.js, we've kind of tried to build, find a testing framework is around Node.js. So the QA, engineers and the engineers can have that conversation. And they really, one of the things we do is they do peer reviews of each other's unit test and then, all the way up to the functional test. So that collaboration is happening a lot more as you was talking about, if you just do it over to kind of the wall or the fence, that imaginary boundary, those conversations never happened before.
True. Well, you guys mentioned Sauce Labs, and I noticed that your writings are within the Sauce Labs blog.
Yeah,
and I love their product. Everywhere I've gone, I've brought them into the organizations that I've been part of, and most importantly, they're our platinum sponsor for STPCon. But the question I have for you guys is: do you see that cloud-based automation platform world changing? And if so, what are some of the things you see them expanding to?
I think one of the areas that Sauce could definitely expand or improve on in general would be just the way that they kind of pull down your tests and run them in parallel. They do a great job to speed up your whole test execution by, splitting things out of multiple VMs and pushing it that way. But the problem is that there's all these network hops along the way because you're adding additional network hops, if I ran my test locally, it runs, say in 30 seconds, but when now I push it up to Sauce Labs, they have to pull it down, it adds that other network hop. But one of the things that I think that they will be moving towards, and I've seen some glimpses, is when they physically take a particular like build from your, pipeline, they're going to physically put all your tests on their VM that is hosting Selenium and run it from there locally to where it's eliminating that whole network hop, and it's going to, one, speed up your test and possibly eliminate some network latency.
Yes, agreed.
I think that's one great place. I think the other place that, in general, that I think we've only scratched the surface around mobile native app testing in general. Right. I think the one thing that I would like to see Sauce is not be so pigeonholed just in using Appium as their mobile native testing framework.
Right.
There's so many other ones out there. Like we're, at Gannett, we use Espresso for our Android and currently using Xcode 7 for our iOS. And we do that just simply because it's when you package up your tests, they're actually on the app. And then when you install it on the app, you're eliminating that whole network hop. And so it makes our tests a lot faster from that standpoint and more reliable because we're eliminating some network calls. So that's where I would like to see SOS go. And I think they're listening to people to
improve their stuff. I agree. Now, Ashley, I noticed in your biography, I caught a statement. You said you're passionate about making an impact on education. Now, I want to get your, what things are you doing to make that impact on education? And are you talking about education of testers or actually
both
schools?
I think it's rare to find in the software industry a product that you are passionate about. And more so, it's rare to find software developers and testers that stay at a company for a decade or more. And I've been at Blackboard now for 11 years. And that's because I'm really passionate about making an impact in the world of education. I'm not cut out to be a teacher. I don't have the patience for it. I know that about myself. But I do feel like I am making a difference in children's lives by giving what I think is a great product and what could be even better. Just with the work that we're doing and being able to make an impact that way. But more so, I like being able to now reach out into the industry and even share my thoughts, whether they're shared or not, or people agree with me or not. I still like to impart what I've learned over the last decade or so. And then even learn, and I might change my mind, but I always love to learn and educate myself and educate others. And so it's just something I love to do, the field is.
Well, they're one of the guys from Code.org is going to be speaking at STPCon, and Code.org, if you're not familiar with them, or if you are, they're teaching kids at an early age. So people are volunteering for working with Code.org. I want to be a volunteer to coach kids on how to do development, how to do testing at a very young age. And yeah. Kids are logging in there and learning how to test Minecraft. If you've got kids, they probably play that. And so, I think the one thing that I've learned is you can watch kids test things, and I've had mine do that, and they do it without any limitations. They've not let the world of 20, 30, 40 years of life ruin them and make them have perceptions in their mind. They just do it freely. They're the best testers. And
funny you bring that up. I was reading a blog post from James Bach, and he said one of the best sessions he ever had was with his son that he just brought along with him on a job and just watched his son, he just helped guide his son a little bit, but watching his son test was amazing. And it's just really funny you bring that up. But yeah, I agree.
It's so too. I think many companies miss an opportunity to have kids be freelance testers for them. Because mine can break every app, including the iPad that it's on, too. But that's a different story.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure mine brings Raz kids every day.
So another thing I wanted to ask was, Greg, I think you have written several articles, and I've got your articles up here. One of the things that I'm very interested in is one of the articles you wrote in December 2015 on review of visual versus functional testing. Yeah. I've got a session that I do with STP called visual testing. It's somewhat similar to that, but it's not that technical. It's more about not seeing with your own eyes what you should be seeing. And I know Apple Tools, amazing product that allows you to catch things that the naked eye just usually doesn't catch. But can you tell us about that article and a little bit about what you were conveying with that one?
Well, I think it really started with, I think it's in my intro in general, is like everybody wants to move to test automation, and it's a great thing. But the one as soon as you make that jump to automation, people forget about some of the things that are really important when you're testing in general or exploratory testing, is that visual aspect of it. You can only do so much with a functional UI test or integration test. You can only do so much, and that visual aspect is so important. And so I kind of took this article in that sense of here's a forgotten, test coverage that everybody's, forgotten about, and kind of took it down to a couple tools. Apple Tools is really great. I like how they can layer everything. In the sense that where if you was just really trying to check certain pieces of the page and make sure everything lines up, it looks great. But then I kind of kind of stumbled across, you know, PDF, which is kind of a tool that Google uses. It's, you know, open sourced, and, you know, it was more designed in the sense is as you're running your test along, it's taking screenshots, and you can kind of go back and, you know, you would have a PM or business analyst or a QA person go through and say, okay, this diff changed a little bit. Does this make sense? Okay, if it does make sense, then they will check it off and they don't, you know, open up a bug. They still had that visual check, but it was giving them those indicators when it was a possible visual change in, you know, the app or the, you know, whatever application you was trying to test. And I just tried to kind of go over that whole process of, you know, comparing the two a little bit.
Okay. And actually, I noticed one of your articles that stood out was using QA to enhance communication from July 2015. I completely agree with that. And but what were some of the things you were touching on there? And what were you? How do you use QA to enhance the communication and bridge that communication gap?
Well, I think throughout my career, what I noticed was that almost everybody on our dev team was putting quality just on the QA team, and to start, that's just mistake number one that you can make. Everybody needs to own it. And, you know, it really comes down to the team owning quality. But what I found as a functional tester throughout my career is that in staying with Blackboard for so long and working across the many different things that we offer, you know, I've been able to gain this worldview of Blackboard and the features that we have and be able to start thinking, oh, well, if you're working in gradebook and you want to grade this, well, what about rubrics and grading with a rubric and being able to tie that? And well, if you can grade with this, how does it impact how it appears to this user? Where if you get a software developer, they might just be looking so much at the code, not really caring about it. But then your tester brings this whole other perspective as they've been using the system end to end, not just at that component level. So I think you get a lot of good questions and communications that your QA person can help drive as you start discussing your user stories and defining your acceptance criteria. I mean, we start thinking about things that, you know, nobody else has even thought of yet. And that's where we start driving some of our acceptance criteria. And I think we come up with some of the best ones, too, for your user stories. And I think, you know, it's just looking at as you rely on your tester, you know, maybe they're not coding, but they do offer that breadth of information that I think just teams, it's so easy to get caught down in the weeds. And a skill I always look for in our teammates is, can you step back? Can you get that 30,000 foot view and think, what is the business driver? What's the business need? How does this look holistically through the system? And I think your tester really brings that perspective.
I agree. And the other comment you made was, you preach test-driven development to anyone that will listen. So there are people listening today. So who do you feel listens the most in that coaching and that preaching? Is it devs or testers? And why do you think they do?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on the team. I will be honest. The one Scrum team I'm working with is great. The developers are incredibly adaptive to what I'm trying to say. And, you know, before they start developing, you know, we work through what are we going to test here? We're not in a traditional, you know, using any traditional tools for test-driven development, but we are making sure that we all agree on the acceptance criteria, and that acceptance criteria therefore drives the test plan that I want to write. But we all agree on those tests as well together before, you know, a lot of the development work is, if they've already started, you know, it is what it is, but at least they get that perspective before they say they're done testing or done developing. They know exactly what I'm going to test and what has to pass before they say it's ready for me. And they tend to start running through those tests themselves, you know, or write the tests and automate them, or write the unit tests that we think need to be unit tests. And it's made a huge difference on the teams that I've seen be able to take that, look at the tests driving their development practices, and be able to do that first.
And I think you said it perfectly in that it does depend. You can never say the developers take it the toughest or the testers are the toughest to come through, because I think it is all based on the actual person themselves. And I think you're probably good at that because you focused on the leadership side and understanding people and how they work as well. Because I think they know that what you understand is all based on that certain person's personality and how they are.
It is. And I think it's been a big change, and I'll talk about it in the session quality first a little bit, is that, you know, even with the testers, yes, of course we want everybody developing to the test and making sure the tests all pass, but it's also a change in role for what I think we traditionally considered a tester in the past. And with agile development, you know, your tester is really more there to facilitate quality. We are not just your sole test source of testing. You know, right. Consider an engineer a tester, consider your designer a tester. Everybody is a tester. You all own that quality piece. You just might not have done it in the past before. And that's a big shift for even newer testers or more traditional functional testers to go forth and realize, okay, I'm not just the tester here. I help facilitate quality. I should be injecting my opinion from day one, not just when they say they need something tested.
Absolutely. Well, and you mentioned quality first. I think, are you guys, this was a session before at SDP, right? So you had the first part of it, and this is a follow-up to more. People love case studies. What we find is our audience loves case studies, their attendees, and learning from what other people do, being able to take that and say, I've had this experience. Here's what you can do. You can learn from that. Not all experiences are the same, but I do think that we can learn a lot from what other people have had to go through. And I think that's what you guys are doing in the session. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, a bit of it. So when we first spoke at STPCon, we had a very detailed experience report on our first foray into automation at Blackboard and using fitness. This is a little bit of a different take on that. So it's another spin from the agile side. And what is our, has my experience been trying to move our teams to true agile at Blackboard? And we're still not there. We've hit a lot of cultural barriers. Then we'll talk about some of those. I'll do a little fun agile game, just kind of highlighting these cultural barriers there. And so we want to talk about that a little bit. And I'm hoping for a really interactive session so that we're all kind of doing an experience report with each other. You know, what's worked, what hasn't for you guys, for anybody testing in an agile world. And kind of all take away from each other and go forth and be able to change the world at our respective jobs.
Yes. Well, you mentioned definition of done. And Greg, I noticed one of your goals for this year was creating a definition of done checklist. And, you know, people will argue I'm never done and testing just stops. Sure. But I love that. I love that as a goal. Everybody should have that as a goal. You know, when do we feel confident to ship? When is things ready? So can you expand on that a little bit and, you know, and talk about what you're wanting to do there?
Yeah, I mean, you hit right on there. It's like you could never really be done, but it's about like what is everybody comfortable? What's everybody accept? What would be physically completed by the end of like two or three, you know, week sprints? You know, and it's really, you know, your checks and balances of user story, a sprint or release, to where you say, okay, we've done all the peer reviews, we've completed all the automated tests from unit all the way up to UI or functional. And maybe we've done some exploratory testing, and it's really putting everybody on the same page where they're collaborating and everybody understands when we get to the end, we're not just kind of like last day, okay, throw it over to QA. Last day means it is the last day and everybody checked off everything on their, you know, to-do list for the, you know, definition of done. And so that's really where I went with that. And I know we have a couple teams that are exercising, you know, definition of done. But there's a lot of teams who are, you know, at Gannett that still need to make that improvement. And a lot of it's been around the mobile side where they just operate a little differently from a, you know, a more back-end API or a front-end UI. And so it's just really creating that clear communication and making sure that everybody's on the same page is really what it means to me. And I think it will make everybody be a little bit more successful at the end.
Yeah, we've started implementing it too at Blackboard. we've actually ended up putting in a checklist onto our Jira ticket for the user story. And they're not allowed to close it out unless they've checked everything off, you know, from code reviews done, pull request merge. I mean, simple things like that, design review, you'd be shocked at how many weren't done before. Just having it there in your face so that they have to check it off and make sure it's done, things like that. And just being okay. You can't even act. You cannot physically slide your story to done on the work board till you are have checked everything off here. So it's actually been kind of handy, but pretty eye opening to what people tried to not do before saying something was done.
That's usually pretty amazing. Yeah. Standpoint. I think it's a great goal for just the team in general, because I think it leads into better team collaboration during the sprint planning or even at the end of a sprint. And it doesn't even have to really be at the sprint level. It's really at that user story, because that user story may only involve one developer, one QA person. And it's really making sure that they're always collaborating with each other, saying, hey, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know. And so it's really keeping them really close. And I feel like we have a couple teams that do it really well. And that's where those blurred lines of QA and developer are coming together, because it's interesting, you know, developers are trying to learn how to actually test and try to build quality into the app. And that's been a very interesting piece. To see that kind of revolve in the last year and a half since I've been there.
Well, and you've got the culture of development, a culture of testing. And when you speak of cultures, you don't hear it much today like you did years ago. You know, it's cultural. It's a cultural thing. You have to learn it, and people have to understand the different cultures. But I noticed, Ashley, you like learning of new cultures. You were an exchange student in Germany.
I was.
Do you see a correlation between cultures and testing? And if so, how do you bridge that gap?
Oh, gosh. I think I need a beer or two to answer that question. I think that in learning new cultures that you become receptive to other points of view. And that's why I think it's extremely important to learn other cultures. And applying that to the software development world, I've been able to really take in the engineer's point of view, the design point of view, learning what it is for them to do their work, really trying to learn myself what an engineer does, you know, just from as simple as taking courses in development that I've never done before. Really trying to understand that so that I can, you know, if I can't speak their language directly, we can at least communicate and get our points across to each other and teach each other where we're all coming from so that we can still make that quality product. But yeah, that's a good question.
Thank you. Well, I noticed, Greg, you're a DIYer, and I worked with a home improvement company for 19 years. So
yeah.
And I never became a DIYer myself, so I'll tell you that. And it's a tough, you do a lot of things. I've noticed you do framing, wiring, plumbing, finishing your basement. How do you think that learning to do it yourself and being a DIY pro helps you to be a good hands-on tester or automation architect or engineer?
I wouldn't say I was ever be a pro, but I one, I like challenges. It's an amazing challenge. I get satisfaction of like kind of, you know, learning something that I've never worked on before, and then, you know, and then seeing the end product. And the same thing applies, you know, like with test automation or testing or just a project. It's kind of like at the end you have this kind of finished product, and you're like, hey, I physically took this from, you know, ground zero and thought about the whole thought process. You know, when I started doing, you know, like my basement, I was like drawing on a piece of paper, trying to, you know, plan out everything. And I've done a really great job in the sense of planning out, you know, laying things out and just taking my time along the way. And I think it's the same principles kind of translate over into software development too, is don't rush things. Make sure you're always thinking about infrastructure up front, quality up front, because at the end, when it comes to the time to do inspections with the county, you'll pass, you know, and you don't want to fail. So it's like you're always kind of going back and checking yourself, you know, and it's like iterations. It's almost the exact same thing. It's like every time I even go down to my basement, I walk around, I'm like, oh, I need to do that. I need to still do this, this, and that. And, it's about iterations, continue to learn from your mistakes, recalibrate each time, and just continue to apply it. It's one reason, and it's relaxing to me to do. You know,
and it's a situation, wiring and plumbing are definitely two things you definitely don't want to go wrong. So you want to thoroughly ensure both of those, especially if they both go wrong at the same time, you could be in a pretty shocking situation. So,
yeah.
You don't want your home to be in a mess. But Thinking of an RV, I know, Ashley, you mentioned that you like traveling and you've been to Alaska. You met some pretty interesting people at campsites and traveling around. And I relate mm-hmm. to kind of to conferences because I've been to several conferences. I love STP the best, and STPCon. But, you know, they allow us to meet people from all over the world, different cultures, different ideas, different thoughts. And I've learned so much from going to STPCon and other conferences just by hearing somebody say, you know, I don't think that way, and here's why I don't. And I take it back with me. Have you got one thing or more that you've taken from a conference, you know, someone you've met or something you've learned that's kind of stuck with you for a long time after meeting someone at that conference?
Good question. I think the general feel is just always go in open-minded. That's just always stuck with me anyways. But really, Dave Hefner at the last one, you know, we talked a lot, but I mean, we always kind of feel, there's just always this general feeling of, I feel like a fraud. What am I doing here? But really, you're there getting ideas from people. Like, sure, I've been in the industry for so long, but I always feel like there's this sense of, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to learn. And that's the key phrase is, but I'm going to learn. So yeah. Even if you don't know something, be willing to try it, be willing to learn it. And it's just something that it's my philosophy throughout my career and, you know, acknowledging I might not know something, but I'm going to learn it and I'm going to master it. And just doing that with anything, I mean, doesn't have to be just testing, but yeah. And so, yeah, Dave Hefner is probably one of the biggest people we got to talk to and just the biggest influence on myself. I don't want to speak for Greg as far as putting ourselves out there, building that super network of QA friends and getting ideas and being able to take that back. And ever since then, I've just seen my career explode, even just within my own company and I wouldn't say my influence, but just like the thoughts that we have in testing and being able to take that forward with the development teams. And I would have never done that had we probably not met Dave, I think, almost 2 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, it was about 2 years ago. He opened our eyes and kind of gave it the confidence.
Yeah.
Push forward, share our ideas with people. I think, and every time I see Dave, it's always an amazing experience when we talk and, you know, how we kind of met and everything. It's just, it's kind of interesting how one individual was able to kind of open our eyes and really push us a little further to really try to share our stories and share our ideas with other, you know, people out there.
That's so true. And to be so young as he is and to have done so much already and have the influence.
We're pleased to have him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I looked for an old guy when I read about him and followed him. I was like, first time I met him in Denver a year ago, I was waiting on this old guy to walk up, and here comes this kid talking to me. So I was like, wow, you have really done well. And we're fortunate to have him speak a workshop with us as well.
Oh, yeah, he's fantastic.
It's going to be amazing. Greg, I noticed the other goal, I'll get both of yours today, is creating key performance indicators. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. You know, what do I do? How do I, you know, create those dashboards? And what is your goal there? And what are you trying to do with that?
You know, this is one of my original blogs, and it's been on like my back burner for so long. And I'm just starting to gain some traction at Gannett and really starting to roll it out a little bit. But it really started of like just everybody's like, you know, we're in a CI model with pretty much every team now. And they're like, oh, everything's working great. And I'm like, you know, I stepped back and I was like, are we doing really that great? And so I started pulling information in, and we're using a tool called Datadog. Datadog is a cloud monitoring system where I can start integrating with pretty much any tool I want to. And so I'm able to pull in my CI stuff, and, you know, from the build, the time you build, it tells me if it passes. I can give, you know, a time frame between a week, a month, or whatever. And it can say, okay, I can put this indicator, say if I drop below 90% on this, it's going to mark it yellow. And if it goes below, you know, 85, we'll mark it red. And it gives us that indicator saying, okay, the build's only been at 85%. So how's that ever going to give us a chance for any of the other testing to be successful? So it's that start indicator from that standpoint. And so that was the starting point. We started building in durations to where saying, you know, how long is it taking us to build the app as soon as something's pushed into, say, GitHub, you know, and our goal is to be under 35 minutes to where we could physically push something, to, you know, to prod. And if those indicators between, you know, every single type of job goes over an amount and the total amount doesn't get to 35, it gives an indicator and we can send it out to people. The pieces that we're working on for 2016, I think it will really start helping people is understanding, you know, test coverage. You know, like test coverage is such a broad thing. It's like you could say I'm at 80%, but what really tells me that I'm really, really have developed great test quality. And so once it's an indicator to understand how many tests we have and just really get people a little bit more involved with it. Also rolling up, one of the things when I first joined Gannett, and I think it was the same with the Black when we was doing test automation, it's amazing how people want everything to run green. So people was ignoring tests. So they was just marking a tag, ignore it because it wasn't passing. We want the build to be green, right? So I created a script to make sure they rolled up how many tests was ignored. And I was like, okay, why do we have 20 tests right now ignored and no one's paying attention to them? So it was that indicator. As soon as that threshold gets over, it sends an alert to the team and saying, okay, we have a test here that is ignored and we need to make sure that someone's, you know, taking the time to look at it. And we have a lot of things from, you know, GitHub performance and everything, but it's going to be an overall project. Every project team's going to have their own dashboard for this whole key performance indicator. So it's going to be indicators that understand the whole health check of the whole project at the end. And I mean, our DevOps team is, they're really thrilled about this, even from all the stuff we're doing from our past team. You know, they're a platform as a service. They're providing all these solutions, and all the developers and QA has to use their solutions and everything. And they want to make sure their stuff's working, you know, up to par too. And it's amazing how the teams are adapting to this whole, you know, KPI stuff. And I'm really excited about it for 2016 and really can't wait till we get it all put together. And it gives us that great health check at the end of an actual project for a week, where it'll give you that kind of snapshot of a week or a month and everything. And it lets the C-levels people feel really comfortable and really happy to see what we're doing as a team.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that session at the next STP, right?
Yeah. I think that's a great one. Every time I talk to people, they're like, man, that sounds really awesome.
Perfect. You guys are right in the middle of an automation track that I think what we find is a lot of folks come with that technical expertise. We have a lot of people attend the sessions and the workshops. What we find is like you get the Dave Hefners and you guys and Jim Hazens and the other folks that are speaking. I don't want to miss anyone there. I'm sure I did. But they get full classrooms. So I say to the audience, get signed up quick. We got early bird going on right now, and probably when this is released, it'll be too late. But what I want to say there is, if you're in automation, get signed up, get those seats before they fill up, because these guys here are going to be doing some great things. And I want to give you guys just an opportunity to say anything we may have missed or not have covered that you'd like to speak on the workshop, because I really want to make sure we get a good promotion on that, and then people can hear anything that you want to say in additional to this hands-on with BDD and customer test automation.
You know, just to give the plug to the workshop, I think the workshop's going to, one, if you was ever curious about, you know, behavior-driven development, it's going to give you great exposure to that and how it could work and bring the team together, collaboration. You know, we're going to kind of help people to kind of look at a user story, take that user story and translate it into actual test automation, which is Gherkin. And really help people kind of understand how to write cucumber tests, and at the end have a physical test at the end to where they could say, hey, I developed this test, and then I pushed it into like a Jenkins CI server, and then also at the end pushed it to Sauce Labs and ran it, you know, across all these browsers. It will be a great experience, because I think a lot of people are looking for just a little bit more information around test automation. I think some teams are doing, you know, companies are doing a great job, but I think a lot of people are just trying to break that ground.
Right.
And it's daunting when you're just looking at all the information out there. So I think it's a good, especially a good starting point for people that are just, they're trying to get their feet wet and learn what to do. And I think this will be a good session for them.
Well, I'm excited to have you guys with us again. And before we go, I'll ask each of you the same question, but we'll start with Ashley. What is the one thing you're looking the most forward to about this STPCon?
I don't want to say the food in San Francisco, but the food in San Francisco. I'm really looking forward to, you know, meeting with other industry peers and just picking their brains and learning more myself. I really can't wait for that.
Feel the same way. How about you, Greg?
I mean, location's always great. you know, I think the one thing that really kind of got me jazzed up about this STP con, this will be my third time. Second time as kind of a speaker. I mean, yeah, second time as a speaker, but the first time I kind of got, you know, was, gosh, like 2 years ago, but is how they've started to bring all these workshops. I love workshops. I love hands-on things and really just, you know, kind of playing around with things and having something to kind of say, oh, I did this at a conference rather than to say, I went to this session. Now I got to kind of go back. I'm really excited about how they've made the workshops into like 2 days and half sessions. I think that's amazing. I think a lot of people are going to come out of this conference with an abundance of knowledge and, you know, some possible working examples they can take back to their teams when they leave the conference.
I agree. I think it's evolved to something really good and it's really working well for us. And what I think is we always want to make sure our speakers give something to somebody to take back. And I know you guys are going to do the same. I'm looking forward to this session and the workshop as well. And we're just going to have some fun in San Francisco, right?
Yeah. I think so. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being with us on this broadcast. And to everyone out there, we're looking forward to seeing you at STPCon. If you've not registered yet, the door is still open. Seats are filling fast. Get out there, get registered, and we'll see you in San Francisco in April. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of STP Radio. Stay tuned for more episodes, and don't forget to check out stpcon.com to learn more about the conference being held at the Westin San Francisco Airport Hotel, April 4th through 7th.